that is more in touch with the economic struggles of people, that wants a bolder vision for the party. And frankly, they need to step aside to allow for a new generation. Mm.
And what do you say to President Trump, who has threatened to arrest and deport the U.S. citizen, Zoran Mamdani?
It's just so un-American. I mean, you know, the remarkable part of America is New York can produce Zoran Mamdani, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Donald Trump. And as different as they are, we usually celebrate in this country the extraordinary multiracial democracy we are. And when Trump is threatened in any way, for him to lash out at people just undermines what this country stands for. And I was so disappointed. You know, I have to mention this. There was a colleague of mine who criticized Mamdani as uncivilized because he ate food with his hands. Now, of course, we eat pizza with our hands and hamburgers with our hands, but that reminded me of the British criticism of Gandhi and Indians and my grandfather, who was fought in India's independence movement, as being uncivilized because of the way they ate. You know, it was America that helped India defeat colonialism, and it's sad to see echoes of colonial rhetoric here in the halls of the United States Congress.
Congressmember Ro Khanna, we thank you so much for being with us. Tune in to our July 4th special. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Cascade Forest Conservancy, presenting the Understory Northwest Film Fest, a night of stories about our connections to the natural world, showing at the Kegan's Theater on Thursday, May 29th. Proceeds from the event support ongoing local conservation and habitat restoration. Tickets and info at cascadeforest.org.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, hundreds of caregivers in Oregon vote to unionize. Oregon's governor and members of Congress are left reeling about likely severe budget cuts after Republicans pass the president's big bill, and how a dam removal is helping more fish survive in the Pacific Northwest. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, July 3rd, 2025. I'm Annette Newell. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. More than 1,100 caregivers at Portland's Providence St. Vincent Medical Center have voted to unionize, joining Service Employees International Union Local 49. Catherine Carley has details.
Hospital staffers, including certified nursing assistants, cooks, lab assistants, pharmacy techs, environmental workers, and patient representatives, will soon begin collective bargaining with management over a new work contract. New union member Finn McCool works in the hospital's food service department and says changes to working conditions in the hospital were a major driver to organize.
There's a lot that makes St. Vincent a great place to work, but we've also seen just tons of changes over the years around staffing and benefits. So my fellow caregivers really knew that jobs were only going to get harder.
The St. Vincent caregivers will join thousands of other unionized workers at Providence hospitals in Oregon, Washington State, and other parts of the country. Providence officials released a statement recognizing the union and saying they were prepared to work with it toward a new contract. McCool says the company made several changes to staffing and work policies without feedback from its employees. He says changes to the employees' health care benefits caused a major upheaval.
It's been a recent change to our health care plan with Aetna switching over, and that was probably a very large reason why a lot of us decided to vote yes. We had our own internal health care system. We changed to a different thing. Co-pays changed. Things were definitely a lot harder with increased deductibles.
McCool says political uncertainty, particularly in the government's health care policies, was also a significant concern.
We're seeing a lot of changes going on with our government with cuts, especially right now. What threatens us is cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. Our CEO said these cuts are threatening the hospital.
I'm Catherine Carley for Oregon News Connection. Original reporting by Mark Richardson.
Oregon received a huge increase in asks for help with federal immigration enforcement efforts over the last year. As a sanctuary state, Oregon usually is not obligated to comply and usually does not. KBOO's Josh Salem tells us more.
Donald Trump's federal authorities asked Oregon for some kind of assistance with immigration enforcement 95 times over the past 12 months. An annual state report just released provides details and demonstrates that number represents a 265% increase in asks compared to the previous reporting period. Oregon has been a sanctuary state since 1987. That status should bar local and state resources from being used to enforce federal immigration laws. Over the last 40 or so years, state lawmakers have strengthened protections and even rights for immigrants, including access to health care and driver's licenses. Starting in 2021, lawmakers have required public agencies to report to the Criminal Justice Commission attempts by immigration authorities to circumvent the state's laws. The news comes amid an unprecedented attempt to ramp up immigration enforcement, a campaign promise made by then-presidential candidate Donald Trump. Now, his so-called Big Beautiful Bill would add more than $100 billion to fund immigration enforcement and detention. The report noted the majority of the requests were sent by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement to local jails, asking them to continue to hold in custody persons wanted by ICE. Immigration authorities also made requests to sheriffs, district attorneys, and the state police. Requests for cooperation also came from the U.S. Department of Justice, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, and even from the Canada Border Services Agency. In addition to requests to hold people in detention, immigration authorities asked for information like copies of police reports, arrest warrants, and law enforcement's investigative documents. Marion County received the largest number of requests from the authorities, with 38 of the 95 reported statewide asks going to the county's jail and sheriff. In two cases, local Oregon agencies told the commission they fulfilled the federal requests. One was not actually related to immigration enforcement, and the other was for the jail release date of a person in custody. The latter is considered public information in Oregon, and thus the immigration authorities did not get special treatment. The report also details calls made to an Oregon Department of Justice hotline to report violations of the state's sanctuary law. That saw a 276% increase in such reporting. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
What President Trump calls his Big Beautiful Bill passed in the U.S. House today, with all but two Republicans in favor and all Democrats opposed. Oregon's representatives were among those speaking out against the bill and arguing for changes, including Southwest Oregon Congresswoman Val Hoyle.
We're in yet another time where Republican colleagues from the Freedom Caucus who say that they came here to reduce the debt, this bill literally blows up the debt. The Senate bill is worse than the House. So we're putting trillions and trillions of dollars on a credit card for our kids to pay. We're lifting the debt ceiling. And if Biden had tried to lift the debt ceiling by trillions, what do you think everyone would say? But they've been called to the White House, and we know they will cave. Their issue is that this bill isn't full enough. So we have 11 out of Oregon's 33 rural hospitals that are on the brink of closing. We can't afford to lose our rural health care. We've got jobs in clean energy, jobs in tourism that are leaving. So people are going to be unemployed while we are shifting costs to the state. Now, my Republican colleagues say, we're not cutting Medicaid. We're just shifting it to the state. We're just shifting all these burdens to the state. Let me tell you, they are cutting Medicaid. They are cutting Medicare. They are making it more difficult for people to access services that they need. We are not going to allow them to get away with their talking points, because my constituents can't eat your talking points. And the reality of this is going to come crashing down on all of us and really crush our economy. We're here to fight. We can continue to speak up. We can continue to make sure Republicans have to face the truth.
Joining Congresswoman Val Hoyle on a press call about the president's bill was Oregon Governor Tina Kotek.
Thank you, Congresswoman Hoyle. It's really a pleasure to be here in that we are all together as Oregonians, and I want to thank the press for helping us raise awareness. This is a five-alarm fire, and we're here to tell you that this is devastating for the state of Oregon. So let's remember, every single year, Oregonians pay their federal taxes, and those dollars come back to our state through vital services like healthcare and food assistance and other programs. That's how the system has worked for decades. That's how it should work. The Trump administration and Republicans in Congress have broken and will break and are breaking that system. We thought the House bill was bad. The Senate version is worse. Just the provider assessment cuts alone would result in more than $10 billion leaving Oregon and our hospitals and our doctors and our nurses over 10 years for the Oregon Health Plan, our Medicaid program. For SNAP, according to our preliminary analysis, when the bill is fully implemented, the Trump administration and congressional Republicans will have cut over $425 million per year from food assistance in our state, and Oregon doesn't have the money to backfill that loss. I have directed my state agencies to immediately evaluate the granular impacts of this budget bill to Oregonians. One thing is very clear to me, though. This budget takes our federal tax dollars and hands a giant tax break to billionaires at the expense of our children, our families, and our communities. The money that helps Oregonians see doctors or put dinner on the table for their family is now going into the pockets of those who will need it the least. Last month, I convened a rural healthcare and food security panel, as well as listened to people who count on these programs today to take care of their family members. And their message was really clear. Rural parts of Oregon will be hit the hardest because of these cuts. One in three Oregonians rely on the Oregon Health Plan. This includes one in two children. One out of every two kids in the state is on the Oregon Health Plan. One out of every six Oregonians relies on food assistance through SNAP to feed their families. Every dollar stripped from these services, it's going to be put towards the top 1% in our country. That is a moral failure. This budget was inked in greed and not human dignity. I'm not going to pretend that our state budget resources can backfill any of this.
And that was Governor Tina Kotek. Now here's Oregon Congresswoman Andrea Salinas.
Congressional Republicans are betraying the American people by forcing a bill through that will make Oregonians sicker, hungrier, and poorer. At a time when Americans are already struggling to make ends meet, this bill would sell out children, seniors, veterans, and families to give massive tax breaks to billionaires. I know we've heard this before, but it is worth repeating. These cuts would be some of the cruelest, most dramatic gutting of benefits ever passed in Congress. Congressional Republicans are pushing cuts to Medicaid. And what this means in Oregon, 1.4 million people rely on the Oregon Health Plan. All of these people could be impacted, and up to almost 200,000 Oregonians could lose their health care entirely, including tens of thousands just in the 6th District. Across the country, 17 million Americans would lose their health care. At least when the bill was in the House, it was only 16 million. Now it moves to the Senate, now it's 17 million who could lose their health care. These cuts would shutter rural hospitals and clinics like West Valley Hospital or Woodburn Pediatric Clinic, just in my district. I've been talking to these folks. They are worried. They're really concerned. They could force nursing homes and healthcare centers to close, leaving families with higher costs and fewer options for care. House Republicans' plan also takes away funding for SNAP, our nutrition, Meals on Wheels, taking food away, again, from children, seniors, and veterans. I recently joined Marion Polk Food Share and Meals on Wheels to pass out meals to beneficiaries, and I spoke with one woman who relies on this food to sustain her life. She was told by her healthcare provider that she was underweight a year ago, and if she didn't get nourishing food, she would die. Meals on Wheels is life-saving. SNAP serves 740,000 or one in six Oregonians each month, half of which are children, seniors, and people with disabilities. These people are not statistics. There are friends, neighbors, fellow citizens. Stripping them from accessing food isn't efficient. It isn't cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. It is abuse. And hunger is a policy choice. And while Republicans claim this bill cuts taxes, that's only true for the wealthiest Americans. If you are not a billionaire, you are being sent down the river. For Oregonians struggling to make ends meet, this bill will raise costs on everything from your energy bill to your prescription medications to your food costs. Not only does this bill raise costs, it is also a fiscal disaster, allowing an additional $5 trillion added to our national debt. So for a party that claims to care about cutting the debt, it is crystal clear Republicans care more about cutting health care and SNAP. But it does not have to be this way. Time and time again, I have tried to work on, and I, as my colleagues here have, tried to work on a bipartisan basis on legislation that would actually bring down costs and make life better for families. But congressional Republicans have rejected this time and time again, and instead are just hell-bent on ripping away health care and food assistance for millions, all to benefit wealthy people.
And that was Congresswoman Andrea Salinas. Now here's another Oregon Congresswoman, Janelle Bynum.
This bill is trash. T-R-A-S-H. Trash. This bill will have devastating impacts for Oregonians. It will cause our rural hospitals to close. It will make healthcare more expensive and less accessible. It cuts SNAP, forcing seniors and kids to go hungry. It gives more funding to ICE to carry out their inhumane masked raids, and it raises costs. All of that, and it increased the deficit. Not the best deal for us. And to be honest, I'm not sure how anyone can defend voting for this bill. I voted against it last time, and it was an easy decision to vote against it again today. We fought back against this bill by introducing hundreds of amendments, testifying for hours, and showing the American people what's really in this bill. I'll continue to fight. We have to push back against Donald Trump and Republicans who are making life harder for Oregonians. And I'm ready to take the fight to every committee room, every courtroom, and every newsroom to do it.
And that was Oregon Congresswoman Janelle Bynum. Washington State conservationists are working to preserve 5 miles of the lower White Salmon River. As Brett Pivoteau reports, a dam removal's opened up more than 30 miles of new spawning grounds for steelhead and 15 miles of salmon habitat.
Conservationists are celebrating the protection of 5 miles of river frontage along the White Salmon River. The 174-acre site was purchased by the Conservation Fund more than a decade after the removal of Condit Dam. The dam was breached in 2011, draining the former Northwestern Lake. The lake bed makes up much of the acquisition. Gates Watson with the Conservation Fund says the removal restored a 44-mile free-flowing river.
The dam's presence had an impact on the migration route for fish, including regional salmon populations, and disrupted Yakima Nation's right to fish and gather and hunt along this land. And with this transition, that will be restored.
The land was purchased from Pacific Corp, which operated the hydroelectric dam. The site is located in the ancestral territory of the Yakima Nation. The acquisition will be managed by the Conservation Fund temporarily before being acquired by Yakima Nation on a permanent basis. Planning for the long-term restoration brought together Pacific Corp, Yakima Nation, the Conservation Fund, and an owners association whose cabin sat near the shores of Northwestern Lake. Cabin owners had been leasing land from Pacific Corp. Site surveys were conducted to establish individual lots so owners could acquire the land under their buildings. Watson says site planning also included a conservation easement and more.
The vision for the completed White Salmon Corridor project is 5 miles of connected riparian habitat and a foot trail along the White Salmon River that is owned and managed by Yakima Nation, restoring opportunities for tribal members to access the river and fish.
The river is a breeding habitat for steelhead, chinook, and coho salmon, and researchers have found juvenile fish are returning in strong numbers. For Washington News Service, I'm Brett Pivoteau.
A multinational mission is making history in space. KBOO's Dave Chittenden has more in the story.
For the first time in over 40 years, India, Poland, and Hungary sent their first astronauts into space for a private flight to the International Space Station. The three countries shared the tab for the mission, where ticket prices were over $65 million per seat. The mission will last 14 days, during which the crew will be conducting several scientific studies and experiments from over 31 countries in a collaborative research plan. The mission was delayed several times due to mechanical issues with the ISS, the launch capsule, and the booster itself. This is the second time the booster, named the Falcon 9, has been used, while also debuting a new capsule in the Dragon series that includes multiple new design upgrades. The company sponsoring this mission is Axiom Space, a company making plans to create the world's first commercial space station, aptly named Axiom Station. Axiom Space will also be attaching several commercial modules to the ISS while it's still operational, then detaching from the station and becoming part of the future planned Axiom Station once decommissioned. The multinational crew was successfully lifted off from NASA's Kennedy Space Center, reaching orbit in 9 minutes. The crew reached the International Space Station, making the total crew of the station 11 astronauts from 6 different countries. The return date for the astronauts is dependent on weather for the splashdown zone in the Pacific Ocean.
And that's KBOO's Dave Chittenden reporting. The budget reconciliation bill just passed today in Congress isn't just being assessed for its cuts to social safety net programs. Energy analysts say rollbacks of incentives for wind, solar, and similar projects are likely to shake up the electricity sector. Mike Moen reports on predictions that customers' bills would go up.
Pro-consumer voices warn that changes won't be friendly to monthly bills for energy customers. Analysts point to new findings from the nonpartisan think tank Energy Innovation, which looked at provisions in the Senate version this week. It says the plan would cause home electricity costs to rise by 28% over the next decade. Annie Levinson-Falk of the Citizens Utility Board of Minnesota says that's because Republican lawmakers are poised to eliminate clean energy tax credits while expanding new oil and gas leasing.
If we can't build as much wind and solar and renewables, then we're not just going to be building more gas plants, but running kind of inefficient, more costly gas plants more than we would have to.
Levinson-Falk says many are already struggling with their utility costs, and the advancement of cleaner energy sources has prevented things from getting worse. Fossil fuel-linked groups are cheering the proposed measure, including America's Power, which says incentives for renewables are no longer needed and that they're pushing out sources like coal prematurely. These debates remain at the forefront, with energy demand predicted to spike in the coming years. Levinson-Falk says the new report shows transitioning back to a fossil fuel vision would lead to a slower rollout of additional power capacity.
Our power plants are old and they need to be upgraded or replaced.
And Levinson-Falk acknowledges the need for continued upgrades to the power grid with a more diversified energy portfolio. But after upfront construction costs, she says operating solar and wind farms isn't as expensive because there's no fuel needed, benefiting ratepayers. Even with these congressional moves and the potential for stalled progress, she says clean energy would still be part of the mix as utilities develop their own strategies. This is Mike Moen.
House Democrats unanimously join up to vote against Trump's big bill, and two Republicans join them, but it still wins enough Republican votes to pass. Advocates differ on the spending plan's effects on clean energy credits, and manufacturers brace for changes to EV tax credits. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2025 Talks.
Black or white, Republican or Democrat, this bill is coming for you and your family. And it's a simple truth that contempt for working families is hardwired into the administration.
New York Representative Yvette D. Clark is joining all Democrats in unified opposition to the budget and policy mega bill. The CBO estimates it would add $3.3 trillion to the national debt, even as it cuts nearly $1 trillion from Medicaid. Fossil fuel companies praise the bill for rolling back wind and solar tax credits in the Inflation Reduction Act. Michelle Bloodworth is with America's Power, which advocates for coal. She says the IRA is forcing what she calls reliable electricity generation from coal, natural gas, and nuclear to retire early.
These subsidies were established decades ago when it was argued intermittent resources, such as wind and solar power, needed help to compete with other electricity resources, but for too long they have had a distorting impact on our energy markets and are no longer needed.
A new report from environmental analyst Greenfaith says various tax breaks, public spending, and regulatory exemptions means billions in subsidies for fossil fuels. It notes half of all new U.S. oil and gas projects wouldn't be profitable without the state, local, and federal supports. And according to liberal think tank the Center for American Progress, without the IRA clean energy tax credits, the average home utility bill would rise by more than $100 next year. Ari Matusiak with Rewiring America says that's because once built, renewables now actually produce electricity much more cheaply than coal, gas, or nuclear. He says that'll be important as power consumption increases.
As energy demand from AI, data centers, and manufacturing surges, households are boxed in, expected to pay more while getting less. The bill doesn't just burden families. It undermines our country. We need low-cost, abundant energy to compete globally.
Energy prices are growing faster than inflation. Almost $7 billion in clean energy projects have been canceled this year. That's compared to the more than $300 billion in private investment across thousands of U.S. clean energy facilities since the IRA passed. Optimal EV's Elkhart, Indiana plant employs 35 people building commercial electric vehicles. The company's Jeff Hyatt says their growth has depended on EV tax credits, and without them, their consumers would be squeezed.
It would create an obstacle for our customers, so I would anticipate we'll see a little bit of a drawdown or a slowdown of inbound orders, much like we did when they paused the EPA funding earlier in the year.
I'm Edwin JVR for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
A species so decimated some ecologists doubted its recovery is thriving on Central California's Channel Islands. Conservationists helped the island fox make the fastest mammal recovery ever recorded under the Endangered Species Act after its population was nearly wiped out by a non-native predator and deadly disease. Roz Brown has the story.
A small fox that lives on the Channel Islands off the coast of Southern California is thriving after near extinction. The island fox, found nowhere else on Earth, was listed as endangered in 2004 when only about 30 remained. A multi-agency recovery effort that started in 1999 resulted in the fastest comeback of any terrestrial mammal under the Endangered Species Act. Photographer Chuck Graham has traveled to the islands to chronicle their recovery.
It wouldn't happen with all the work of the biologists and everything. If it wasn't successful, then it would have been a really big disappointment. But everything worked out.
Revered by the island's early indigenous people, the fox weighs just 4 pounds, smaller than the average house cat. The population began plummeting in the 1960s after predatory golden eagles replaced bald eagles, who could no longer breed on the islands due to the effects of runoff from the pesticide DDT. Before the island fox could recover, golden eagles were relocated to the mainland, and 61 bald eagles were reintroduced starting in 2002. With the predators gone, the fox survival rate increased to 90%, and the population rebounded to more than 2,000 in 2015. Graham says he wanted to document not just the island fox, but its environment and the urgency of preserving it.
I knew the foxes were an item and I knew the bald eagles were, but it's one of those things we just got to go to know. I mean, I brought an awareness.
Scientists still debate how the foxes got to the island some 10,000 years ago. Some speculate they rafted there on storm debris when ocean levels were lower, or were more likely introduced by the Native American Chumash tribe, who considered them a sacred animal. I'm Roz Brown.
The Oklahoma Supreme Court rules against a native citizen. Arctic communities celebrate whaling season with several festivals. And a first-ever native food truck festival in Minnesota features 20 vendors. With these stories and more, here's Brian Bull and National Native News.
In a 6:30 ruling this week, the Oklahoma Supreme Court says a native citizen living on her reservation isn't exempt from state income tax. The Journal Record reports that Alicia Strobel, a member of the Muscogee Nation, had argued that her income was exempt because she lived and worked on her tribe's land. In 2020, Strobel had filed 3 Oklahoma individual income tax returns for the 3 previous years. She said the U.S. Supreme Court decision in the case McGirt v. Oklahoma supported her stance, as that ruling reaffirmed the existence of the Muscogee Nation's reservation. 2 years later, the Oklahoma Tax Commission denied her exemption, leading to an appeal and the case making it up to the state's highest court. The definition of Indian country was deliberated in oral arguments last year. The Oklahoma justices said McGirt doesn't apply to state tax law. In an opinion, they said that extending McGirt to preempt Oklahoma from taxing the income of tribal members residing on unrestricted, non-trust private fee land must come from the nation's highest court. Governor Kevin Stitt praised the ruling, saying he rejects race-based tax exemptions. Tribal leaders have denounced the ruling as inconsistent and a form of legal gymnastics. The Muscogee Nation said they are reviewing their next steps. Several coastal Arctic communities hosted festivals throughout June to celebrate a successful whaling season. In Ukagavik, that meant 4 full days of sharing food, prayers, dance, and traditional blanket toss. It also meant gathering as a community in joy and in loss. Alona Nyden with the Alaska Desk has more. And a note to listeners, the story discusses suicide.
Whaler Quincy Adams soars above a seal blanket at Simmons Field in Utqiagvik with a bag of candy in his hands. He leaps even higher and tosses the kaleidoscope of sweets as the children around him whoop with joy and catch treats. Adams is one of the captains of the Aulik whaling crew. They were among those who landed the bowhead whale this spring and threw a feast for the community.
Make sure everybody gets a bite to eat. Make sure that nobody goes hungry.
Nalukatak, which means blanket toss in Inupiaq, is a traditional celebration of the successful bowhead harvest. The whaling crews serve several courses of subsistence dishes throughout the event. Caribou, duck and geese soup, donuts, boiled whale meat, maktak, akutak, and the delicacy, fermented whale meat and blubber, or mikigak. When the feast is over, the whalers stretch a sealskin blanket, inviting everyone to jump on it. Then, the crowd moves indoors and continues with Inupiaq dancing and drumming throughout the night. This year's Nalukatak had an emotional side for Adams. A young member of their crew died by suicide earlier this year, and the crew opened the event with a prayer and a message of hope.
This is something we wanted to and get out to the other people and to the young people and the teens, tell them that there is hope. There is family that loves them, and if they need to talk to somebody, talk to somebody.
Whaling Captain Herman Aksuak says that dedicating Nalukatak to those who passed is not new. He says the event is about the community coming together.
You put on the blanket and jump and let it all out on the blanket and jump for joy.
The communities of Wainwright, Kaktovik, Nuiqsut, and Point Hope also celebrated whaling festivals in June. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naiden.
If you or someone you know is in crisis, call or text the 988 Suicide Crisis Lifeline. And this Saturday, Minnesota's first ever Native American Food Truck Festival kicks off in St. Paul. Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine says more than 20 Native food trucks will serve up both traditional and urban indigenous fair foods at Harriet Island Regional Park. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, July 3rd, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Dave Chittenden.